Welcome back to the Roundtable and another installment of Meet the Panelists. Last time we heard from Fran Berman. Fran Berman is a regular panelist on the Roundtable, research professor and Stuart Rice Honorary Chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences. And the last time we talked to Fran, we were talking about what exactly that position is and what it means. Fran, great to talk to you again. Thank
you
so much.
Good to talk to you, too.
Is that, in some ways, is this position a culmination of what you have been doing throughout your career?
This is a brilliant question. Thank you very much, Joe. And yes, one of the things that brought me to the position of Director of Public Interest Technology at UMass Amherst is the recognition that in every position I've ever had, whether I ran a computer science lab at UC San Diego or whether I was head of the San Diego Supercomputer Center or when I did a lot of other things, when I was co-founder of the Research Data Alliance, so these are all kind of various organizations, the thing that always fascinated me the most was not the guts of the technology, but what you could do with this. How could you make an impact with the technology to make things better? And that's what public interest technology is all about. And so when I got to this position, it combined a lot of the things I liked best. I really have a passion for making technology good for us. I enjoy leadership. I enjoy building community. I enjoy working with students and, you know, this generation that both inspires us and will be taking over from us pretty soon. And so it's been really wonderful to be able to do all of that in one position.
I think most of us can have these moments. I'm 55 years old, and I think of 30 years ago when I started at this job, I didn't have a computer. I had a word processor. There were no cell phones. So a lot has changed in what I think of relatively. It doesn't seem like it's 30 years. It doesn't seem like a full career.
Yeah.
So what has it been like for you to be along this tremendous technological ride as a scientist, as computers become part of our lives and integrated, and yet, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but we still seem to be wary of them.
Yeah. And in fact, we might have more reason to be wary of them now than others. But in some ways, it's always the same. And in some ways, it's always different. So how is it always the same? We never know everything. And we're always on to the next problem. What's up ahead? What do we need to be curious about? For me, I'm always thinking, okay, knowing what we know, what do we do next? And that's the heart of essentially all science, is asking the big questions and trying to get more and more knowledge about them. So those things have been the same throughout my career. But the things that have been different is the whole culture and ecosystem in which these things are embedded has really changed. When I first started thinking about computers, computers were sort of great labor-saving devices, but they weren't thinking. They hadn't permeated every single profession everywhere. They were pre-gathering huge amounts of data and then processing them in some way that really becomes an aid to what you're doing. They couldn't exploit people as badly. They couldn't advantage us as well. And so the whole ecosystem has really changed so that we are now in the technological age. When I first started, in some real sense, we weren't in the technological age. And that has made the work we do much more important, but a little bit much more scary at the same time.
Because we all have, and I'm holding up my phone to show Fran, we all have a computer that we're basically tied to all day and night.
Yes. We have lots of computers. We have cell phones. We have laptops. Some of us have pacemakers or insulin pumps. You know, those are computers.
Right.
Our cars are computers. Our refrigerators have computers. There isn't one darn thing, if you try, our baby monitors are connected to the internet. And so if you think about it, we're in a, and there's a name for this, the Internet of Things. We are living in the Internet of Things. And even if you try to avoid automated systems and computers in your life, you cannot live a real life as a citizen without some sort of interaction with technology, without lots of interaction. And it's changed the way we do things. It is made, it's made interacting with people through social media and other means, you know, much larger, much more at scale, much more democratized. It's made it less intimate. It's made it less high quality. It's really changed the way we interact with each other and we navigate our own trajectories. And I find that almost intimidating. Mm. You know, it is such a big change.
Why are we so, I mean, I see this on the panel. When there are issues of about technology, when there are issues about whether it be AI or privacy or whatever the case may be, we on the panel look to you or to Jim Henler or and say, please help us with this because we don't know what we're dealing with. And there is that intimidation. And I'm interested in how that goes back to there are those of us when we took our SATs who did really well in the English side, not so well in the math and science side. And where that intimidation comes from and how we overcome that. And I'll even broaden the question further as to how we overcome that, especially for women and girls who I know this is something you've worked really hard on.
Yeah, I've worked my whole career in the women in tech field and are very interested in being as supportive as I can. You know, in some sense, I got to blame this on, you know, computer scientists. We have promoted the mystique that these are really, really complicated entities, all of these devices and systems, and only we can understand them. But if you think about it, we deal with complicated entities all the time. Our bodies are complicated. We don't have the same reverence for, you know, the average doctor, or our cars are complicated entities, or the water system in America, you know, is right. A complicated entity. And in some sense, we don't assume that we can't understand the basics and more important, understand the outcomes and the impacts of these things ourselves. And I think that's going to be, and that to me gets to the government. So the government has to understand enough about the outcomes of technology to be able to put the guardrails there and to be able to help us use it in a more public-focused way. And I do think that we focus on the complexity and the mystique of these devices rather than getting a little bit of technological awareness and some awareness of the social controls and having real and substantive conversations about them.
And without being overtly political, which I try to avoid in these segments, these particular segments, but the idea of, okay, we have obviously COVID, we have science, and in some cases we chose to believe it, and in some cases we chose not to believe it. The climate, changing climate, we choose to believe, some choose to believe this, some choose to believe that. And then there comes to be this hesitancy of believing in science. And that seems to me, and maybe you've seen this throughout our history, I don't know, but this seems to be a moment where we're really hitting it. And so when you talk about guardrails, I mean, those guardrails have to also bring us down a path where we start to trust it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's two problems that really fascinate me. Number one, I think seems more now than before, we have lost the recognition that science is not certainty. Just because there's good scientific evidence that something probably will happen does not mean we know that for sure, or that as we get more and more information, our opinions might change. And the science is pretty convincing. Our bridges generally don't fall down. The sun generally rises up. These are all scientific theories. We don't know for sure that that's going to happen, but we have some confidence that this is a reasonable way to look at things. And we have to understand that, think about COVID. You know, we knew very little about COVID when COVID started. And the amazing thing was this whole worldwide community of people right. shared data, shared studies, you know, made drugs, tried things. And we learned more and more as it went on. And the things that we learned were very useful for us in creating vaccines and creating remediations and all of that. So, you know, science is evidence-based. Ideas, I think, are really important in our lives. At the same time, there are arguments that people have that, in some sense, it doesn't matter what the evidence is. There is an emotional response. Abortion is a really good mm-hmm. example of that. Some people will look at the science, but you can't take someone thinking about science about, you know, when does life begin, and someone who has a very emotional reaction about it happens here or it happens there, because they're talking cross purposes. And I think a lot of these discussions about science has sort of gotten into the emotional range rather than what's the evidence, what does it tell us, how has that changed over time.
Fran Berman has been our guest on Meet the Panelists, where we learn more about our wonderful panelists on the Roundtable program, about their lives and careers and how they arrive at their various points of view. Fran Berman, a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Such a pleasure.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.